"Stop that thing," Santiago asked.
"We'll split up. Maybe our combined fire will bring it down," Athena said. "Theron, you have the only grenade launcher. Load the last of the EMP grenades and fire them once you get close enough. We'll cover you from the rooftops. Once the Beatles' shields are down, we will open fire." The staff sergeant nodded his helmet. "Santiago, take your team to that rooftop," Athena said, pointing. "Taylor and Malone, you got that one. I'll take the third with Griffin." The kids all dipped their heads, and her team followed suit. She took a second to scrutinize everyone around her. Goggles and breathing devices covered their faces, masking their features. But she knew they were all terrified. She knew she was. Her own heart was beating out of control. The abomination drilling into the sand suddenly lifted its head away from the hole, opening its mandibles. The hissing that followed brought Athena to her knees. The kids all clamped their hands over their helmets. She couldn't hear them screaming, but apparently the beast could. It tilted its beady black eyes in their direction, homing in on their hiding spot.
"Go, go, go!"
Athena said. She took off for the ladder and jumped onto a rung when she got there. The hissing stopped, replaced by a ringing in her ears that sounded like a gong going off rapid fire. At the top of the ladder, she crawled onto the rooftop, pushed herself up, and moved over to the railing, staying low. Griffin was right behind her. He got down on his stomach and prepared his RPG while she charged her pulse rifle. Athena checked the other rooftops. Malone and Taylor were in position, and Santiago was still climbing with the kids. On the ground, Theron snuck toward the beast, which had gone back to digging, apparently more interested in what was beneath the surface. Athena licked her cracked lips and allowed herself a sip of water from her helmet.
"Please work,"
she whispered. She patted Griffin on the back, and he raised his RPG. The other soldiers all aimed their weapons at the beetle. A vortex of sand and grit rose out of the hole as it dug deeper. Theron continued jogging toward the beast. When he was a few hundred feet away, he shouldered his grenade launcher and fired all three of the EMP grenades. They streaked through the air, ricocheted off the shield, and bounced back to the sand where they exploded in an invisible blast. The hissing sound that followed nearly brought Athena to her knees again. But this time she fought the pain and, using a hand gesture, ordered everyone to open fire. A torrent of pulse rounds and several RPGs slammed into the shields, all of them impacting in blue blasts that were absorbed in pulsating waves across the surface.
"No,"
she whispered. The soldiers continued firing from the other rooftops, but the rounds were harmless. Nothing but toothpicks pecking the outside of a turtle shell. Griffin flung a side glance at Athena.
"We have to get out of here," she yelled.
The hissing beetle made it impossible to hear anything, including her own words. It scuttled away from the hole and angled its horns at the building where Malone and Taylor were still firing their pulse rifles. A flash of white made Athena turn her helmet. She crouched and raised a hand to shield her visor. When the blinding light cleared, there wasn't anything left of the rooftop where Malone and Taylor had stood a moment earlier. The structure folded, the walls crashing together in a cloud of embers and smoldering metal.
"Run!"
she yelled. The creature directed its smoking horns at Santiago's building next. The children were already climbing down the ladder, but the old man continued shooting. The beetle slammed its mandibles together as the horns glowed and recharged. The kids jumped to the ground, and Theron rounded them up at the bottom of the ladder. He pointed for them to run. Griffin pulled on Athena's arm.
"Let's go!"
he shouted. She could hear that. She turned to move just as another blast of light flashed in the distance. When she looked over her shoulder, Santiago was gone. The rooftop glowed red from the heat that had vaporized his body. But the school bus driver's sacrifice had bought the kids enough time to get away. They were bolting between the buildings below. Athena followed Griffin down the ladder and jumped to the sand. Moving around the side of the structure, she waved at the kids. They caught up with her a moment later, and she directed them back to the sewer entrance. She wasn't sure what the hell they were going to do now, but they had no other choice than to retreat. The ground rumbled beneath her feet as she ran after Griffin. He stopped to load another RPG, and she risked a glance over her shoulder. Theron had halted to fire, too, but the beast was scuttling right for him. It swiped the air with a spiked limb, impaling the staff sergeant on one of the tree-length barbs. He squirmed and fired his pulse rifle into the sky before going limp. The creature continued toward Athena, but she couldn't move. Her body was paralyzed with fear and shell shock.
"Out of the way!"
Griffin shouted. He pushed her aside and raised his weapon. The RPG rocketed into a building to the left of the beetle. The miss wasn't a miss at all, she realized. The RPG slammed into the barrels of jet fuel stored inside and outside the hangar. A massive explosion consumed the monster in a rising mushroom cloud. The heat wave slammed into Athena and Griffin just as they moved around the side of the final hangar.
"Don't stop!"
Griffin shouted. They bolted for the storm drain entrance across the base. The kids were just ahead, nearly at the manhole cover. Ear-splitting hissing stopped Athena halfway. And she turned to see the flaming beetle burst through the building they had just left behind. The creature aimed its glowing horns at them. She brought up her rifle, but saw something on the horizon over the smoldering beast. A flicker of blue emerged. Not the same color as the sky, but a darker blue, like a deep pool of water. Then several more. A small squadron of the fighters Alexia had dubbed sharks were en route. They were done for now. This was the end of the line. After months of fighting, she would die here, in the sand, with what was left of her crew and the survivors of a doomed field trip. Instead of closing her eyes and holding her breath, she stiffened and focused on the beetle barreling toward her. A cloud of dust and smoke followed the monster as it skittered across the sand. What chance did the human race ever stand against such monsters, she wondered. She lowered her weapon and prepared to meet her maker. When laser fire raced away from the incoming sharks, she flinched. Her eyelids slammed shut and she shielded her body with her hands out of instinct. Several of the bolts blasted into the sand around her, kicking up grit. None had hit her. She was still alive. But the beetle wasn't so fortunate. It had crashed to the ground, several limbs blown off its bulbous body. Blue blood gushed from the purple shell as the fighters continued to unleash their laser fire. Griffin pulled Athena away from the blasts, and they retreated to the sand dune the kids had gathered behind. Safely sheltered, Athena listened to the beast let out its final hisses and screeches. When the bombardment ceased, there were just the sounds of ringing in her ears, rushing wind, and a sobbing child. Athena motioned for Griffin. Together they climbed the sand dune with their weapons. The sharks were all landing on the other side, and a human jumped out of one of the cockpits wearing an NTC uniform, a baseball cap, and a dust mask. "What the hell?" Griffin said. Athena was too cautious to take the stroke of good luck lightly. "Stop right there!" She pointed her rifle at the man, who slowly raised his hands. He pulled down his face mask, revealing a thick red beard.
"That's not a great way to welcome me home," the man said.
Athena slowly lowered her weapon.
"It can't be," she whispered. There was no way this could really be Captain Rick Noble. But that red beard, the confident grin, and that rolling voice all told her it was.
Athena ran down the slope to meet Noble, stopping when she was just a foot away.
"Is that really you, Corporal?"
he asked. Athena wasn't sure what to say when she saw it really was Captain Noble. Instead, she reached forward and grabbed Noble, pulling him close in an embrace.
"I thought you were dead," she whispered. "I never thought I would see you again."
"I'm very much alive, and I'm here to take us all away from this place."
He pointed at the sharks.
"I've got Alexia aboard. She's hacked these other fighters. We're using them to get to Mars."
Athena pulled away from Noble and looked out over the squadron. She couldn't believe her eyes.
"Captain Noble?"
came a voice. Trish had climbed out of the manhole cover behind them. Several of the kids and the two teachers were already standing in the sand watching.
"Hurry up, everyone," Noble said. "We don't have much time. Athena, you come with me. There's someone I want you to meet."
Athena followed him back to one of the ships. Through the translucent cockpit, she saw a creature unlike any she'd ever seen before.
"Meet Roots," Noble said. "He saved my life, and now he's going to help us get to Mars."
The CIC of the massive organic zoo ship hummed around Diego. He gasped to recover his breath as he placed his clawed hand against a display. Blue light rippled through the screen from his touch. A wave of alien hieroglyphic characters appeared in holographic projections.
Here we go,
he muttered to himself. He wiped the blood from his face. The crimson liquid had come from the organic crew he'd killed to get here. The fight had been bitter, but he was a caged animal yearning to be free. There was nothing a few spiders and a handful of hybrids could do to stop him. At least, that's what he'd thought. Now he was concerned this alien language would be what made his plans fall apart.
"What the hell do these mean?"
Holly asked, gesturing wildly at the alien text. Owen and Jamie had refused to leave her side. Bauma had joined them in the CIC, too, his wrist still bleeding. One of the people they had rescued was a nurse, and was currently bandaging him. Jeff and David had accompanied them as well, and beside them sat Sophie. Beads of sweat coursed down her face, and her fingers curled around the armrests of her seat in a white-knuckled grip. Unlike the primitive transport ship they'd tried to steal before, the zoo ship wasn't built specially for hybrids, and Sophie was dwarfed by her seat. She looked like she was holding herself upright by sheer willpower alone. Emmanuel had been deposited into one of the ship's specimen chambers in the hopes they could save his life. "All these characters are just like before," Bauma said. "Wish we had Sonya to decrypt them."
"We have a copy of Sonya," Jeff offered. "Here."
He pulled an NTC portable AI drive from his pack.
"We got it when we went back to the sunspot. Thought it might come in handy."
"Great job," Bauma said, taking it from him. "Just need to figure out some way to transfer her," as they spoke. Diego felt a strange sensation, like blocks being set into place within his mind. The words were suddenly making sense to him.
"The nanobots,"
he realized. As Hoffman had said, they had reshaped his mind and given him a deep-seated knowledge of the organics' language. Hoffman wasn't kidding about how quickly they'd become integrated with the organics by hopping in those chambers. Diego studied the characters scrolling across the CIC's displays.
"Looking for a spot to transfer Sonya?"
Diego pointed to a pad on one of the command consoles.
"Put the drive there. That's a wireless data transfer port."
"How the hell do you know that?" Bauma asked as he gingerly placed the AI drive on the port.
"I can read this language,"
Diego said, still barely able to believe it himself. He waved his hand through a command that turned the whole CIC into a projection display. Around them they could see the rest of the organic shipyard and the white, fortress-like buildings of the former NTC colony that surrounded the huge blue pyramid. Slingers were still throwing plasma blasts at the zoo ship, the rounds dissipating against the ship's shields. All the while, other organic ships were beginning to launch. Clouds of dust exploded around them as their engines thrummed to life. "Do we have any weapons?" Bauma asked, eyeing the ships around them. Diego scanned the commands in front of him.
"Yeah, here we go."
He swiped a command, and a console popped up in front of Bauma.
"Weapons ready."
"And how do I use this?" Bauma asked.
"Hold on,"
Diego said. He activated the automated weapons AI and selected a ship near them that had already taken flight. The cannons blasted, dispersing plasma that tore into the ship's shield and then through the hull.
"Get us in the air,"
Sophie said. She cradled her head. Her skin had now turned a sickly gray, and Diego could see the muscles in her jaw working like she was grinding her teeth together. He tapped on the controls for the ship's engines. The bulkhead vibrated as the fusion reactors unleashed a monstrous howl. Meter by meter, the ship began its slow climb. Plasma rounds continued to lambaste the shields. They dissolved like snowballs thrown at a charging train, but one of the displays floating before Diego showed him that the shield's powers were finite. Too much concentrated fire would take them down. The slinger's assault had already brought the shields down to 80%. Once the other ships began their assault in earnest, they wouldn't last longer than a fish on Mars. He had the weapons systems target another ship. The vessel exploded into a cloud of shrapnel, and he targeted the next. The organics had indeed wanted to protect their massive investment contained in these zoo ships, and he was thankful for the weapons. But even with the automated targeting system, he couldn't keep up with trying to fly the ship and shooting the other ones down. Another fusillade of plasma rounds slammed the zoo ship. The CIC quaked as the shields drained another 20%.
"We need more firepower," Bauma said. "Tell me how to use these freaking guns!"
Diego glanced at the display showing Sonya's upload progress. In about 5 seconds, Sonya's going to come online. If we can get her to translate the language here like we did on the transport, those guns are all yours. Those 5 seconds felt like the longest in Diego's life. Other organic ships took off, easily catching up to the lumbering zoo ship. They couldn't climb through the thin atmosphere fast enough to escape the encroaching fleet. Rounds blasted into their shields, and a swarm of smaller ships circled the zoo ship, ranging from drones to the winged fighters with their prominent dorsal fins. "Looks like they're waiting for our shields to fall," Sophie said. "They're going to try boarding this thing. It's just too valuable for them to lose."
"Then it's all the better we're taking this bastard," Balma said. Suddenly Sonya appeared.
"Lieutenant Diego, should I enable English translations for the rest of the crew?"
"Yes," Diego said. "For the love of God, yes." The characters around the CIC morphed into English.
"Hell yeah, we're in business now!"
Balma said. He grabbed hold of the weapons controls, studied the instructions, and then began leveling volley after volley into the incoming ships.
"Get some! Get some!"
he yelled. The gleeful barrage didn't last long. He squinted at another zoo ship rising in the distance.
"Ah, shit, take a look at 3 o'clock," Balma said.
"I know, I know."
Diego said. Adrenaline flowed through him and his long muscles quivered. His half-organic body wanted him to spring into action, to fight, and let loose the immense strength he'd been gifted by the nanobot's remodeling process. But there was nothing here for him to fight. Sophie groaned. She was leaning forward against her straps now, clenching her head with both hands. The farther they went from the colony, the more, it seemed, the nanobots tormented her. Diego had managed to get all these people aboard this ship and by some miracle off Mars's surface. But if they died in a magnificent fireworks display here, what did it really matter? His muscles still ached, and a fire worked its way into his chest. The lingering effects of the integration burned on his mind. They had to do something drastic.
"The ship's shields are down to 22%,
Sonya reported.
"This vessel will not be able to endure much more. If the shields fall, my probability analysis indicates a 99.9% chance of catastrophic ship failure caused by enemy fire."
"Well, goddammit, here's hoping for that 0.1%, Balma said, unleashing a torrent of fire into the oncoming fleet.
"It's not enough," Diego thought. They had to do something else, but what? Even if they destroyed the ships within firing distance, there were more rising into view. He held in a breath as the first zoo ship turned its turrets on them. Massive plasma bolts streaked into their shields, rocking the ship violently.
"Hold on!" Diego shouted over the noise.
Holly was yelling something, but Diego ignored her. His mind was focused on moving the ship and getting them the hell out of there.
"She's right!"
Sophie yelled. That got Diego's attention. If he could have raised a brow, he would have. His new semi-crustacean body didn't allow him a full range of human expressions, but Holly seemed to understand him all the same.
"The virus," Holly said. "Sonya, reprogram the ship controls virus, the one that locked us out of the transport and the Shekundo Kasu. Instead of targeting human ships, target enemy organic vessels. Now!"
"Reprogramming," Sonya said.
"Good call, Holly," Sophie said. "These Zeus ships are nodes in the organic fleet. They've already got direct communications and strong data connections with the other ships. It might work."
"Well, I'll be real sad if I can't shoot them all down," Balma said, "but I also like the prospect of staying alive."
"Sonya," Diego said, "is this possible?"
"I have attempted to retarget the program,"
Sonya said.
"I can mask it as a communications between ships, and it will relay between all organic-operated ships within the local fleet instead of human-operated ships."
"See you later, you blue bastards," Balma said.
"Wait a second," Diego said. "When you say local, how close do we have to be to these ships? Within thousands of kilometers? Or can we shut down the organic fleet across the entire universe?"
"I am afraid the local nature of this type of communications relay will only affect ships within the solar system,"
Sonya replied.
"Within this solar system?" Sophie asked. That's still more than we can ask for. Do it! Now!
Diego felt a surge of confidence flow through him like a warm wind. The pain still echoing through his flesh was nothing compared to the thought of stopping the organics. Not just the ones on Mars, but also those around Earth. Their efforts wouldn't ensure all the organics died, but it would cripple their spacefaring abilities, buying time for the humans to escape.
"Shields are down to 5%,
Sonya said.
"The controls virus has been relayed between ships. All ships controlled by organic personnel that have responded to our viral communications request have been affected. I estimate it has currently infected 95% of the ships within the vicinity."
"Disable their controls," Diego said. "Now."
Most of the ships had already stalled. They drifted and tumbled through space, carried only by momentum. Diego imagined the organics within them seething with rage. But still rounds blasted against their ship. Several of the ships surged upward, still targeting the zoo ship. Rounds shook the shields. Those bastards were some of the 5% avoiding the virus. Diego and the crew had a zoo ship. They had a functional AI. They had a virus working through most of the other ships, and still they were going to go down, just as the sunspot had. Then it hit him. The strategy they'd used before on the Radiant Dawn, maybe, just maybe.
"Sonya," Diego said, "if you've still got access on any of those ships, overload their reactor systems."
"Yes, Lieutenant."
Everyone in the CIC went silent, staring at the view of ships docked in the shipyard and those chasing them upward. Diego could hear his heart pump in his ears, or whatever it was his ears had become. Bauma still fired on the stubborn ships that hadn't been fooled into accepting the virus. A few of the stalled organic ships suddenly exploded into violent balls of spreading debris and plasma. The blasts set off a chain reaction with other nearby ships, knocking them back to the planet's surface. Vessels that hadn't been caught by the virus were still swept up in the chain of explosions. The entire shipyard seemed to disappear in a flash of white, followed by a rolling cloud of black and red dust.
"Shields down to 1%,
Sonya said. A single, resilient organic fighter still trailed the zoo ship.
"Watch that one!"
Jeff yelled. "I got him, kid," Bauma said. He let loose a spray of precise pulse fire that tore into its bow. The ship began venting plasma, then erupted. Above them, between the stars, pinpricks of lights sparkled. More evidence of distant, detonating organic ships.
"All those ships destroyed using the organics' own weapons against them!"
Bauma whistled, then clapped Diego on the shoulder.
"Sure glad to have you on our side, bro."
Diego didn't respond. He was too busy staring at what he had become. His humanity.
"Almost through the atmosphere,"
Sonya reported. Cheers erupted from all around the CIC as they sailed into the blackness of space. Diego looked toward the blanket of stars, swimming in the blackness around them. He wondered if Ort was somewhere in those stars out there, looking out for them. He must be. Probably sitting up there with Captain Noble, too. He wasn't sure how else to explain the miraculous escape from Mars and their victory over the organics. He twisted away to watch the others celebrate. Bauma wrapped his arms around Holly and pulled her in tight for a kiss. Jeff and David hugged Sophie, with Owen and Jamie joining them. They'd traveled months together on the sunspot to Mars. But Diego hadn't truly felt like part of the crew until now. They now shared their joy with him through handshakes and hearty embraces, despite his mutant appearance.
"We did it,"
Sophie said after sharing a hug with him. She seemed to be more relaxed now.
"We made it!"
Diego realized then it wasn't just Ort and Noble guiding their good fortunes. There was so much more to it than that. He'd seen how Jeff and David, just kids for Christ's sake, had risked their lives against nearly insurmountable odds to save the others. The way people on the crew threw their own bodies in the way of pulse rounds and spider claws had demonstrated just how selfless each of them was, how much they cared about ensuring the others lived. And humanity survived. somewhere on their journey in the Rhino. And later, in the Shekundo Kasu, he had decided he would give his own life to ensure these people had a future. Through their tenacity. Sophie's, Emmanuel's, Holly's. He knew they would find a way to give humans a fighting chance. Bama and Holly had each other. Emmanuel, assuming he lived, and Sophie too. He had known he was the one that had to become an organic to save them. Back then he had had no one but himself. But now he had them. A family as tight as the one he'd served in with his brothers and sisters back on Earth under Captain Noble.
How are you feeling?
Diego asked Sophie as she stood beside him, staring out into the blackness of space.
I honestly feel so much better, she said. I know the nanobots are still inside me, but Hoffman and the organics no longer have control over them. Not after the devastation we caused back there. I'm sure that somewhere on this ship there's a way to deprogram those bots and get rid of them forever.
There has to be,
Diego said. Curiosity tugged at him to go exploring, to see all the other species preserved here. How many secrets of the universe had humanity not yet had a chance to explore? This ship would unlock a future full of surprises. He glanced at one of the displays.
Sonya appears to be learning how to manage the medical units aboard the ship, he said. Hopefully she can help you and the other people we rescued.
Sophie's gaze seemed to turn far away. And Emmanuel?
And Emmanuel,
Diego agreed. He'd seen the wounds on the man. On Earth, those injuries would have been fatal. He had lost too much blood too quickly for any hope of recovery. For Sophie's sake, for the whole crew's sake, he hoped he was wrong. Maybe this ship could stitch the man back together.
Once we make sure everyone is okay, I want to sweep the ship to root out any remaining organics, he said. I think we got most of them on arrival, caught them with their pants down, but if we've got stowaways, better that we deal with them now.
Sounds like a plan, Lieutenant, Sophie replied, turning her attention back to him. She almost seemed to be recovered, now that the organics had lost their grip on her. The color was returning to her face, and there was a brilliance in her eyes. Something he'd never seen before. She reeked of confidence, even with that faraway gaze. This was just a glimpse of the woman she must be, he was sure. He imagined she must have been a hell of a leader, considering the lengths the crew had gone to keep her alive. He looked forward to seeing her come to life over the coming days.
The only question I have,
Diego began,
is, where do we go from here? There's no way it's safe to return to Earth or Mars.
The zoo ship can support us for the rest of our lives if we want it, Sophie said. But that won't preserve humanity. We need to establish ourselves on a new planet. We need to use the ship to keep the human race going.
You got a bright idea of where that'll be?
Diego asked.
TRAPPIST-1, Sophie said. It's a star. Decades ago, scientists discovered there are several Earth-like planets orbiting it. They might support human life.
How close is it?
Just under 40 light-years.
Diego's stomach flipped. Even as an integrated human, he still felt a pang of shock at such an unthinkable distance. Sophie put a hand on his shoulder as if she could read his mind.
These ships are capable of faster-than-light travel. We've come this far. We'll explore the ship and its capabilities and get ourselves to TRAPPIST-1. Her confidence was infectious, and Diego could tell she believed every word she spoke. This wasn't just for the benefit of crew morale. Hell, she didn't just seem to believe they were going to create a new human colony on another planet. She knew they were going to do it.
Then to TRAPPIST-1 we go,
Diego said. He input the coordinates Sonya gave him. Sophie pressed her palm against one of the view screens. She stared at Mars, shrinking away below them. I'm going to send a final message to any humans that might be left in our solar system. If there are others like us out there, they need to know where we're going.
You risk letting the organics know where we're going by doing that.
We'll encrypt our communication so that it can only be opened by human-made AIs,
Sophie said.
That's the best we can do.
And how will they get out of this solar system if we've wiped out all the organic ships?
Sonya only gained control of organic-operated vessels. Any vessel that was left vacant or had a man-made AI operating it would have been left intact.
The odds aren't good that anyone survived out there, much less is able to get control of an organic ship.
Sophie gave him a sorrowful smile. Every day on Earth, Alexia told us our odds weren't good. They were abysmal, in fact, but we made it, Lieutenant. We've made it this far despite every indication that we shouldn't. If we can do it, so can other people. Diego nodded at that.
He couldn't argue with her tenacity.
Once Sophie was resolved to do something, there was no turning back. She succeeded, and if there was any human out there with half the determination she possessed, then Sophie was probably right. That person would still be alive, fighting the organics until their last breath. Lieutenant, you go ahead with your final sweep through the ship. I can take over command here, Sophie said.
The way she said it, he could tell she wasn't just making a suggestion. This was an order, packaged in a slightly nicer package.
Yes, Doctor, I'm on it.
As Diego left the CIC, newfound power coursing through his half-alien muscles, his mind raced through all the uncertainties they would face. Maybe they stood a chance at surviving space in this huge, unfamiliar vessel. Maybe they could make it to a habitable planet and reinvent civilization. But then what? Would the organics still find them? Did the organics harbor a sense of resentment and vengeance? How long would humanity be given to rebuild before the next great threat arrived? He passed out of the CIC as Sophie traded requests and orders through Sonya. Whatever challenges they faced, he knew the people aboard this ship, the people leading this crew, would not back down. Hoffman had been wrong in concluding that humans had to live as slaves to the organics in order to survive. But he had been right about one thing. Humans were creative and curious. Invention had taken humankind from throwing wooden spears at woolly mammoths all the way to shooting pulse fire at ugly aliens on Mars. No matter where these people went, they would find a place for themselves, and where they did not find a place, they would make a place. Even among the stars, Diego was certain that human ingenuity and invention would not only survive, they would thrive. Epilogue. Sophie took a deep breath. The smell of fresh grass and pine greeted her, a scent she'd never thought she would smell again. She sat down on the soft earth and waved her hand so the blades of grass tickled her palm. There had been many months back on Earth, and later, during their brief time on Mars, when she thought she would never feel grass again or sit under a pine tree like those that had once lined the mountains in Colorado. A gentle chirp of an insect or bird, she wasn't quite sure what it was, sounded in the distance. A smile crossed her face. If Emmanuel were here, he'd be able to identify whatever it was. His love of biology hadn't been restricted just to what he could see through a microscope, but also encompassed the world around them. She wished he could join her now, to enjoy this peace with her. Across a bubbling stream, Jeff and David were playing a game of catch with Owen and Jamie. Several smaller children, Sophie recognized, jumped between them, running for the ball. One of the children, no older than 3, slipped on the wet grass and slid across the ground. A twinge of alarm crossed Sophie's mind, wondering if the child had hurt herself. But as Sophie watched, the child stood and laughed it off. These children weren't the only ones that now called this planet home. Several of the people aboard the ship had found themselves romantic partners during the long journey to the TRAPPIST-1 solar system and had begun to start new families. Even with the faster-than-light travel capabilities of the organics' zoo ship, The journey had taken them the better part of 3 years. That had given them plenty of time to learn the capabilities of the ship. Not only had they kept themselves alive, but they tested the genetic engineering capabilities of the ship, too. The zoo ship enabled the development of brand new life forms, chimeras based on compatible genetic data between species. That was the basis for the technology the organics had used to create the hybrids. But Sophie's crew had had other ideas.
"Sophie,"
a low voice said in greeting. She looked up to see what appeared to be a beautiful flower. Only it had vaguely humanoid facial features and a torso, as if it was something straight out of Alice in Wonderland. The sentient plant being was one of the many species the humans had worked to release from the shackles of the zoo ship. She'd seen this particular species in her visions all the way back on Earth, and watching the alien living free on this planet with humans made her think she was living in a dream.
"It's a beautiful day,"
Sophie said.
"It always is here."
The alien continued its stroll through the forest, following the river toward the hilly parts of their colony. It offered a final, viney wave before disappearing out of Sophie's sight. There was still a lot to learn about these other species, but at least the organic technology they had co-opted allowed them to communicate with and study the other sentient beings within the zoo ship. So many now coexisted, building a new civilization unlike any the universe had seen. Still, some species had been far too warlike and dangerous to release. Sophie hated keeping those aliens imprisoned. She didn't want to think she or the humans were anything like the organics, but they'd had little choice in the matter. They couldn't risk the extinction of every peaceful species, human and otherwise, that now called this planet, orbiting TRAPPIST-1, home. It hadn't taken long for those species colonizing the planet to start calling it
paradise.
The planet definitely wasn't an easy-go-lucky place of no work and all relaxation, but after what everyone aboard that zoo ship had gone through, it felt heavenly to be free from the shackles of the organics and able to forge a new future for themselves. The zoo ship was still the central hub of colony activity, providing vital medical resources and, most importantly, what they now called the birthing chambers. With only a few dozen humans on the planet, there was no way to ensure the population was genetically diverse enough or strong enough to survive more than a few generations. They had determined it was necessary to use the organics' genetic engineering techniques to grow humans and other species within the birthing chambers. The whole process was strange, certainly, but that's the way survival worked now. She lay back in the grass and watched the puffs of white clouds drifting overhead. As soon as she did, exhaustion threatened to take her. Working long shifts on the science team with a host of other strange aliens tended to zap her energy. Her eyelids fluttered, and finally she succumbed to their weight. As the last remnants of consciousness gave way to sleep, she found herself again wishing she had Emmanuel by her side. She wanted desperately to spend this miraculous moment with him, something that had been nearly inconceivable only a few years before.
"Hey, Soph, you off for the rest of the afternoon?"
a familiar voice asked. She opened her eyes, rubbing them.
"Was I asleep?"
Emmanuel, big brown eyes and closely trimmed beard, beamed back at her.
"Maybe you still are."
"Don't let this all be a dream."
Then Emmanuel pinched her. She yelped.
"Nope," Emmanuel said with a grin. "Looks like you're wide awake."
He sat beside her and put an arm around her shoulder. She leaned into him, enjoying his comforting warmth. Months had passed before he'd recovered in the medical chamber of the zoo ship. But once he'd finally woke from his coma, it had been impossible to tell he'd ever been on the brink of death. There was a revitalized energy about him.
"I'm surprised to see you here," she said. "Did the council end early?"
"They did," he said. "The first batch of sentients."
That was the inclusive name they gave to humans and other aliens growing in the birthing chambers.
"We'll be ready for their foster parents in a matter of weeks."
"It's a miracle, isn't it?"
she asked.
"No," he laughed. "It's science."
She gave him a playful push.
You know what I mean?
They sat for a while as the laughter of the playing children continued across the river. The calls and songs of other creatures, alien and earthborn, all taken from the zoo ship, carried on around them. A jellyfish-like creature floated on a breeze, changing colors as it drifted in the wind. Sophie grinned when she saw it.
Some days I think I'm back on Earth. Then I see things like that.
She shook her head incredulously.
How are Balma and Diego doing?
They're still promising they can have all these people organized into Roth military shape by year's end. At least they'll be good enough to man the turrets and shoot some rifles.
Holly's busy today, too.
Oh?
Emmanuel inched closer to her.
Seems like business is booming for a psychologist on Paradise, Sophie said. Plenty of people want to know how to cope with all these changes and leaving everything behind.
It's a damn good thing we have her.
It is,
Sophie said.
And they set a date.
When did that happen?
They want to make it official by the month's end,
Sophie said.
They just need a minister.
They got someone in mind?
You're looking at her,
Sophie said. She couldn't help the grin spreading across her face. She was only too happy to preside over the union of two of her best friends. There was really no legal need for the ceremony, but it felt good trying to do things like normal.
I think life is going to be okay here.
It's hard work, Emmanuel said, but it beats being integrated.
Diego,
Sophie pictured the man, twisted by nanobots, a vision of what might have happened to her.
I had my doubts about him back on Mars. I feel guilty about that after everything he's done for us. I don't know how I could have doubted him.
Or Ort.
Agreed.
They sat in companionable silence for a while. Being next to Emmanuel really was like a dream.
Maybe this was all some carefully orchestrated vision from the organics. If it was, Sophie didn't care. This planet was beautiful and peaceful, and everything she had wanted since the organics invaded Earth.
If this is a dream, I hope I never wake up.
The sky began to darken, and the first orange pangs of twilight shone along the horizon. TRAPPIST-1 was beginning to set, giving off its characteristic brilliant red hues. Yes, this was everything Sophie could have hoped for. She was ready to slip off into sleep again beside Emmanuel. Her eyelids drifted, and she forced herself to stay awake. They watched the sunset, holding each other and soaking in the atmosphere. Finally, the sun disappeared beyond the tree-soaked landscape. A sudden overhead roar crashed through the twilight, shattering their silence and threatening to throw them back into a nightmare. A bolt of adrenaline laced its icy fingers through Sophie's body, and she jumped to her feet, Emmanuel close behind. Birds and other animals screeched and squawked, taking flight or sprinting away from the din.
"What the hell is that?"
she yelled. The sky seemed to tear into two pieces as an orange streak blazed through the atmosphere. Sophie looked across the river to see the children had long since returned to the colony. She and Emmanuel took off at a sprint back through the woods toward the zoo ship.
"It's a spaceship," Emmanuel said. "But who?"
Sophie held back her worst fear, that the organics had found them. They ran toward the zoo ship, where they would find shelter and weapons. While they were crossing the field toward it, she saw Diego and Balma sprint inside, leading a group of humans and aliens. At least they would have their defenses ready to go should the worst happen. As the ship approached, faster than Diego could set up any anti-air fire, Sophie noticed the sleek, black shape of the vessel. A painful knot formed in her stomach. The ghostly pains of the nanobots within her returned. They'd since been eradicated, but her memories of what they'd done to her had not.
"It's an organic ship,"
she said. Then she looked to the zoo ship.
"Why isn't Diego firing at them?"
"Why aren't they firing at us?" Emmanuel asked.
Was it the virus Sonya had reprogrammed coming to bite them in the ass? They froze in their tracks.
They would be dead running through an open field with no cover. They would never make it to the zoo ship in time. But as the organic ship lowered toward the ground, it still didn't fire. Nor did Diego shoot back. Were the organics taking control of the zoo ship, just like they'd done to the organic ships on Mars? Were they going to put every single alien and human on this planet back into an orb? A ramp lowered from the organic ship. Silhouetted against the bright white light exuding from the open hatch was a single humanoid shape. Then more. They were too small to be hybrids. Not crustacean enough, either.
Holy shit, Emmanuel said.
Holy shit, Sophie agreed. People. Actual people. The humans began filing out of the ship and fanning over the field. One raised a rifle as Sophie and Emmanuel approached. The human leading the group apparently saw they weren't using EVA suits or helmets and took off his own helmet. The knot in her gut loosened, and the cool sense of relief washed over her when she saw the bearded face she remembered from Earth.
"Captain Noble?" Emmanuel asked, shock in his voice. "Is that really you?"
The man ran a hand over his shaved skull, his piercing eyes flitting from Emmanuel to Sophie.
"God, it's good to see you too," Noble said, his voice booming. "I never thought."
His eyes focused on the terrain over their shoulder. He walked toward them, holding his helmet under the clutch of his arm. An alien creature with squid-like arms moved behind him. Several other humans followed.
"This is Athena," Noble said, indicating a woman beside him. "She saved the rest of my crew and helped get our asses here."
"Athena, nice to meet you," Sophie said, reaching out.
They shook hands.
"I can't believe this is real," Athena said. "You really saved our asses back on Earth."
"How did you get here?" Emmanuel asked.
Athena smiled. "An old friend helped us. You both remember Alexia, right?"
The name took Sophie's breath away.
"Alexia? Our Alexia?"
"Yep," Noble said. "She hacked some of those organic fighters, and when we found out you all had gotten the hell off Mars, she helped pirate this ship."
Sophie watched as children filed out of the organic ship.
"This is Roots," Noble said. "Roots helped me escape on the moon."
"Moon?"
Emmanuel asked. Noble chuckled and shook his head.
"It's a long story."
She thought the first new human she would see would be grown out of vats. Now they had a handful more joining their side. More people to ensure the future of this colony, to protect the humans and aliens here alike. Captain Noble whistled as he looked around the landscape.
"It seems to me like you all might have a hell of a story to tell, too."
"We do," Sophie said. "Care to hear it?"
"If you've got the time."
Sophie looked up at the stars. This truly was a paradise. Brand new planet with new and old allies and endless possibilities for their future.
"We've got all the time in the world," she said. "Now come, follow me. I'll show you our new home."
End of Book 4.
This concludes the reading of Orbs 4, Exodus by Nicholas Sansbury Smith and Anthony J. Melchiori. Copyright 2018 by Nicholas Sansbury Smith and Anthony J. Melchiori. This book was read by Bronson Pinchot. This unabridged recording was produced in 2018 by Blackstone Publishing, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Publishing. If you would like to obtain a monthly update telling you about new releases, call 1-800-SAY-BOOK. That's 1-800-729-2665. For a complete listing of our titles, visit our website at www.downpour.com. Thank you.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.